Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. It's the 29th of August. Very nice to have you with us. I guess it's fair to say it's the last, kind of the last week of the summer season, although
Nice rose of summer.
The last rose of summer, that's right. And but and yet, traffic is a little heavier today. Kids are back to college. Classes start today, so a lot going on, and but we're just thrilled you're with us this morning. We have a lot to talk about. Roundtable at WAMC.org to be part of our discussion. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a lot of returning veterans here who have, it's been with all our vacation schedules, everyone is back in the same room. It's very nice. Alan, you're back. Good morning, Alan Chartok.
Well, good morning, Joe. I'm back, but I'm disconcerted. I have a lot of things on my mind. My fingers are beginning to fall off from practicing my banjo for the Berkshire Ramblers on this Saturday night, and I'm concerned.
This Saturday night.
This coming Saturday.
Yes, this Saturday night.
Yeah, and I'm worried about you know, my fingers. I'm worried about having enough seats in the place for all our friends who want to come. 413-528-1955.
All right, we'll give that number again, and we hope your fingers are okay.
Well, I don't know.
All right, well, keep practicing though. That's important, right?
No, yeah, especially in my case.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Then we go to our another returning vet. Rosemary Armeo, who has been, you've been just like doing family stuff, right?
Family stuff, my granddaughter, the beach. And I've been hearing from listeners saying, come back, Alan's out of control.
Yeah.
Can I just say, to see why.
Apropos of only you.
Yeah.
Your granddaughter is gorgeous.
I know. She has this curly dark hair. It's like I ordered her. That's
yes.
Just
Did you
what
put
I
her
wanted.
On the Facebook?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Oh, no. Kind
She's,
of like
it's about an you know we get hourly updates.
If I ask you to be a friend, would you say yes?
We already are friends, Alan. Who does your Facebook? You don't know that.
I never see your stuff.
That's because you never go on Facebook.
You have to look.
I'm there
go.
All the time.
But if you just go up to the top and just put in Rosemary.
Just put in
right, you'll see
I'm
all
there.
Stuff.
I have a very interesting Facebook. I actually work at.
Oh, she tells us about the kids, and then she'll mouth off about things that are bothering her. It's great stuff.
Oh, that's how unusual for her.
So, Alan did a commercial. I want to do one, too. The Schenectady TEDx Talks are coming up in September. I'm one of the speakers. I'm
excellent.
Thrilled, nervous, and working every day on a speech, and I'll tell you more about it as we get closer.
September?
Yes.
Very good.
I'll give you the date and time and all the particulars.
We look forward to it.
All
right.
Thank you so much.
Libby Post joins us. You got anything to plug?
No? No, I start teaching tonight.
There you go.
But you have a full class, don't you?
24.
Yes,
which
you have
is
a full class.
That's respectable.
Yeah.
It was 30 last time, but I mean, was the spring semester. This is fine.
Yeah.
This is fine. We're starting with it's a public relations and persuasion class. We're starting with a grammar lesson.
Oh, are you?
Which
nice.
I applaud.
Because it's driving me insane. These kids cannot write a simple sentence. And I'm sorry, I don't care if you want to tweet for the rest of your life, you still have to be able to write a sentence.
That's true. Yeah. Leon Botstein for years down at DeBard has been the first thing that happens when all the kids come in is that they learn how to write.
Yeah, you have to learn how to write. I just don't get it. Yeah. I just don't get it. So.
And are these like 100, 200 level?
What no, this is a 400 level class with juniors and seniors.
All right.
I have a graduate, a wonderful student. He's doing really great work now, and he has a blog. He did a really good one on a topic we may discuss today. And it was great, except First Amendment was not capitalized through the whole thing.
Oops.
How did you get out of my class without doing so.
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Well, we're going to be talking about there, and two and all those kinds of things.
I applaud
okay.
you.
Well,
we have lots of fun graphics.
Graphics?
Yes.
All right. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, and we go to what is happening and the stories making news today. All of this would be better if I could actually find it, but I will in just a moment.
When you get there, let us know.
It doesn't really matter. I'm okay. The question is, well, let's talk politics, and let's talk about what has been going on over the last several days. And we begin with this idea of the Democrats seeing openings in traditional GOP bastions. The unpopularity of Donald Trump with voters in affluent suburban areas has jeopardized several House Republican incumbents, opening the chance for Democrats to win in conservative districts. Mr. Trump is so disliked among college-educated voters that he is at risk of losing by double digits in several districts that Mitt Romney carried comfortably in 2002. Just because it's a fun number and we've been talking about it for a while. On Friday, I think when we last left you, the presidential forecast of the New York Times, Hillary Clinton had a 90% chance mm-hmm. of winning. Donald Trump had a 10% chance of winning. Today, it's 89-11.
Yep. Wow!
For whatever, what an for whatever that is worth.
Could I just?
I'm sorry, Libby. Did you?
538. 538. That's the one I'm looking at.
538.com. Nate Silver is 80-20.
And a week ago, it was 84. Kind of.
It'll tighten a little.
I think it will. Yeah. I think it will, as they make all kinds of efforts to give any excuse for Republicans who hate Hillary,
right.
you know, to come over and say, okay, well, then that's better. I can vote for Trump now. But here's what bothers me, right? You guys will correct me, as you always do, but all the polls are showing not the chances of winning, but they're showing a 5 or 6 point difference between the two candidates.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in the Quinnipiac poll, 10 points.
Well, yeah, but when you take them all together, you're talking about 5 or 6 6 points. Now, who in this world can believe that there's that many people who are basically going to vote for Trump? Mm-hmm. And we don't really know who they are. And we know that the pollsters, Brexit and everything else, have not always gotten it right. So to me, if I'm a Democrat, then you start worrying about 5 or 6 points. That's very, very close.
There are no, I believe, landslides in American politics anymore. The polity is just too split up. But it is disconcerting to me, not to take Kellyanne Conway's talking point that the polls are wrong because people vote for Trump and won't tell pollsters about it. I don't really buy that. But it is disconcerting to me that the gap isn't wider. And it just speaks to Hillary's real weakness. And I, as a supporter, have to admit to this, her real weakness as a candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is going to be most interesting. The gap will narrow. I have no doubt about it. Libby's right. And it's going to happen. And it's going to be a close election. And forget about who wins, because that's important. But I'm really worried about what it says about America.
Well,
that there are all those people who take this, mm-hmm. you know, this guy and what he's saying and what he's doing. And then yesterday on the History Channel, nothing else to watch, I watched The Rise of Hitler. And the similarities in the approach, I'm not saying the men are the same, but the similarities in the approach are
absolutely.
So.
I mean, there's, you know, Goebbels said, take your other opponent's lies and make them your own and just keep repeating them. And, you know, it's like, call them a bigot. That's why Trump's campaign is not calling Hillary a bigot, because Hillary's been clearly.
He did call her a bigot.
Right,
what do you
right,
mean?
Right. Hillary has been very clear, that speech that she gave, he's very clear about how he's giving credence to white supremacists and the alt-right and all that sort of stuff. So what they do, they turn around and call her a bigot. And why? Because she's bigoted against bigoted people.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that a great way of looking at life? You know, the issue here is, Alan, is that, yeah, it is going to tighten. And what the other part of this is that there can be no complacency on behalf of anyone in this
election. I don't think it's quite as dire as we liberals here are painting it either. People are voting, many people. Like as much as a third of Republicans are voting for Donald Trump, not because they like him, not because they have no problem with what he's saying, but because they don't want Hillary Clinton
right.
or liberals appointing up to 3, maybe even more, Supreme Court justices during
and
the
vice
term.
Versa.
Right.
Yeah, there's
right.
long-term influences
there's...
here that make you want, just like the Paul Ryan, you know, bite mm-hmm. your tongue and vote for him because he wants to get through a certain mm-hmm. agenda that will never make it through a Hillary Clinton White House.
Right. That's what this is about. It really is. More than any other time. About the Supreme Court and choice and gay rights, gun control.
Well, what do you think about this? Do you think we really are on the cusp of seeing a third party, because the Republican Party has now been taken over? It's a conservative. It's closer to the Tea Party than we've ever had. Can Bernie Sanders make a progressive, a far-left party, and leaving Democrats in the central position, which under Hillary Clinton they certainly have been moving towards? Is that feasible to you? I've never thought that was possible before, but after seeing what this past year, I'm reading a lot about it.
But don't
I think
you think
it's possible?
Well, it just seems to me that it would be more to between the conservative and the Republican, right? Like the extreme conservative.
You would think so, Joe, except that the libertarians seem to be drawing a lot from the supposed Democratic side.
So, a lot? I mean, their numbers are minuscule.
Well, no. The libertarian numbers are not minuscule. We're talking 10% right now.
Minuscule in the overall.
Well, yeah, compared to the 2% in the past, 10% is a lot.
But they're pulling from the Republicans more than
the
Democrats.
Well, that was the assumption on everybody's part, Libby. But
I don't think that
is necessarily true. If they're pulling from the independent sector, and as Rosemary just profoundly said, I hate to say that, there are an awful lot of people who don't like Hillary. And they are looking for a place to go. Jill Stein is remaining where she is. Nothing. So,
right,
Right.
Real quick, should both Johnson and Stein be on the debate stage?
No. It'll be. Do you remember the Democrat debate when they had Martin O'Malley and the other, the guy from Virginia was
Jim Webb.
Give me more time, Jim Webb, and Chaffee was on too.
The answer is no.
No, it's got
to
be the
point. If you're going to have this rise,
no,
they
can't do it, and I don't see it coming from them. Bernie Sanders, if he comes out, this effort he has for a new movement, progressive left movement, which I think then might push the Democrats further into the middle, to the centrist position, that could work.
But Rosemary, you have to have somebody to vote for.
But Bernie just made the Democrats move to the left. More so than they had been before.
What left stuff have we seen from Hillary since Bernie left?
I agree with you, Rosemary.
Well, but she won the primaries. She moved to the left, and now she's in the general. You have to move back to the center. The thing is that Trump keeps moving to the right, even though he's trying to repackage. But it's not working.
The Republicans, as we knew them, seem not to exist anymore.
See, the other part of a third party is. Lynn and I were talking, she was listening to somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody smart about how, I just can't remember who the person was.
That's a qualifier.
The millennials aren't joiners, that they don't like joining things. They don't, and this is the whole thing around identity politics. They don't want to identify necessarily as anything. So the idea of having a new third party with young progressive people, if they're not willing to identify, it's going to be very difficult to form something. So,
and I know he's already having some troubles as he.
Yeah. Oh yeah, his mode he brought his guy in. Everyone else left.
Well, also, they identify, but they didn't go out even in the primary and
vote.
They're not registered.
Okay, so then there is this issue too. So Donald Trump, we talk about his problems, female voters, black voters, Hispanics, young voters, and now in this article in the Washington Post this morning, Catholics. This is his numbers are cratering, it says, with the Catholics. Back in 2012, GOP nominee Mitt Romney lost the Catholic vote by just 2 points, 50% to 48%. The GOP actually won the Catholic vote as recently as 2004, and in 5 of the last 11 presidential election, Trump trails among Catholics by a huge margin. A new poll from the Public Religion Research Institute release shows that he is down 23 points, 55 to 32.
Do we know why?
It's not nice to feud with Pope Frank.
Right.
Well, he
and you're talking to a base of people, Irish Catholics, Italian Catholics. Their grandparents were immigrants.
All immigrants, right.
Well, Libby, I wish I could sign up to that theory.
Well,
you're probably right, but I wish I could sign up to it, because when people move out to Levittown, when they move out of the city quite often, they get to be pretty conservative. I mean, I think that there are ethnic groups in this country who did face no Irish need apply and all the rest of it. But when they, you know, there's always this business about the last guy in, pull up the gangplank.
But this Catholic Church is a different Catholic Church than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. This is a Catholic Church that is more welcoming to people, with a man at the head of it who is opening his arms. Well, not everybody, but, you know, is
well,
much
you said
better
that because you saw Rosemary Grimace.
No. I mean, look, he's a lot different than John Paul, and a lot different than Benedict. Okay, and so here's the head of the church who is saying you don't build a wall, you build bridges.
Look, I'd love to think that the Catholic Church had changed that way and was now a warm and welcoming place.
Well, I think it has to do.
I think Catholic distaste for Trump has to do with Catholics obey rules, and he breaks them all. He divorces. He calls on don't forgive, you know, hold retribution against people.
Well,
I think he's really anti.
For Catholics, choice is also an issue, too.
Well, but he's the one who has gone ahead and said women should be punished for it. Catholics have never done that.
And
well,
the majority of Catholics are pro-choice when you ask them the question.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. They've won in the last Democrats have won in the last
several
elections.
Well, in America, they certainly have. Yes. In the American side.
Right.
So I think he just – in fact, I don't know why anybody who has strong religious identity supports Trump. His support among evangelicals seems extremely hypocritical to me. I would never have predicted that.
It is.
He's a horrible candidate for them. It's just because
he's talking about let's make a white country, and that's what they want to hear.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear.
It's bad.
That's their version of Christianity.
This article points out, and just for a number's sake, and we're going to go to a break in just a second, but when talking about Catholics, Trump is basically adding 5 to 7 percentage points to Clinton's overall margin. 25% of the electorate is Catholic. Clinton is currently taking 14 to 15 points worth of that chunk, while Trump is taking 8 or 8.5 points. And this is a group, again, that is usually close to tied.
Now, Joe, at the risk of sounding stupid, you're Catholic.
Yes.
What are you hearing?
What's the quote telling you?
Well,
they call.
Well,
you do go to church, right?
Thank God, yes. But thank God I only have 10 seconds to to answer this question. But I think we said it earlier. I think it has to do a lot with, we do have to go to a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post making up the group this morning. We have some letters. Then we'll jump back into the topics at hand. We have some good stuff to get to, so we'll get to that in just a moment.
A lot of letters. We heard from Stephen, who said, good morning, roundtable team, or as Ray would say, good morning. 2 years ago, Alan wrote in the Daily Freeman, it just ain't right that there are so many secrets in government. When WikiLeaks began to tell us what was going on, Julian Assange was denounced as a traitor. Let me ask you a question. How can we expect to vote intelligently if we don't know what the facts are? Well, Alan has been saying exactly that for many years. And when Assange first came out with his stuff, I thought it was great. And I think Rosemary shared that. However, since that time with his crazy stuff about Hillary.
Although I still maintain he is not a traitor. He is Australian. What is he a traitor to? But that aside, he is now releasing, he's timing apparently the release of some anti-Hillary material. And that's blackmail. You know, that's extortion. When you have damaging information and you're going to time how and when you release it, that is not freedom of expression.
No, and he released information about gay men in the Arab world.
He didn't edit out their names.
The names of rape victims. I mean, this man has no conscience.
Well, Barbara wonders, does Alan read the articles that Joe brings up during the show? Actually, Joe sends them to us, and he works very hard at this every night. And last night, in my usual hour and a half in the middle of the night, I read every one of them. So there. Thank you. And
so then what's the excuse? Sorry, Alan. I have to catch up for 2 weeks away.
Sweet. Aren't you sweet?
Or are you saying that he's...
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying anything more liberal.
No, she was just taking a good-natured shot.
Yes,
and
that was
well worth it. okay, and James says, as per Maureen Dowd, Hillary is the perfect Republican candidate. That could be.
She actually was right. She's actually right about that. You know, but of course, Maureen Dowd cannot be trusted on Hillary Clinton. She has some pathological hatred that goes back goes back to the 90s.
Yeah,
she just cannot be trusted on her. That is read with and take with a grain of salt.
She used to be so good, and then something happened. I'm not sure what.
She's not cute anymore.
Rosemary
That's my
theory. Has a theory. No, you have a great theory.
I know, but
we can't share it on the
radio,
air, but it's a good
theory. Send
me
a note
theory.
And I'll tell you.
Oh,
yeah.
I think I know what that is.
All right.
So John, who writes us all the time and who I read sometimes, the radical wing of the Democratic Party with its demonizing of white people, hysteria over climate change, attempting to legislate personal association, is driving moderates to give Trump a second look, hoping that he moderates his substance and style.
Well, I think anybody who thinks he's going to moderate anything at this point.
Yeah.
I would just like to say the whole idea of a pivot is like bizarre to me. Like he was one person and we believe because suddenly last week he gave two speeches in a row where he didn't like add any horrible bigoted stuff to it. He's now changed and he's a different person and it's okay to vote for him. Is that really what we think in a campaign?
Well, I don't think it's working. Do you?
No,
he's
but they,
right.
Thank goodness. What if it were?
But pivoting is about going to another issue. They're trying to redefine pivot to redefine who this
his
man
character.
Is, his character, and it's not going to happen.
Well, you both are so sure of that. I'm not so sure. I think there are a number of people out here in this country, and I think we're hearing from them, who don't like Hillary Clinton, and therefore they are looking for an alternative. It's certainly there in this country because of the way in which we do things. Brilliant article in the New York Times explaining all of this, by the way. We have two parties, and you got to make a choice if you're going to make a choice between the two, because then you got to think about what the expected outcomes are going to be. Anyway, I think there are a lot of people who could be persuaded to vote for Trump.
It's 20% of the voters out there, according to studies,
that
are actually still in play.
That's
20% who are either say they've made no decision. I always am suspect of that. Or they have made a decision but could be persuaded.
One of the interesting things in the Quinnipiac poll, and I don't, again, the accuracy of it, but is that the people who have made up their mind that they don't like Trump, 97% said they would. Nothing could happen to change their mind.
Hillary has a similar high, though not that high number. And so the people that they look at are the ones who are like, well, I'm going to vote for Trump, but I'm going to vote for Hillary. But they're the ones who are still persuadable to change. And that's what the message needs to be aimed at.
Mateo says, good morning, Roundtable. I missed the Roundtable over the weekend, of course, but I had the pleasant surprise of meeting Nick Barr of WAMC Bluegrass Time at the Burn Summerfest on Saturday. That's the Burn Summerfest, not the Bernie Summerfest. On Saturday, his show is very enjoyable, and he's a great folk and bluegrass musician for sure. And that's from Mateo. And Mike says, it's too long. Sorry, Mike. We heard from Andy. That's not going to happen either. Sorry. OMG, Alan, a beautiful blue-skied end-of-summer day, and you watch more Hitler crap. We know the story. Get out and take a walk. Smell the flowers.
Yeah, I am disturbed by the people who don't listen to news. Dear Abby, of all things, starts off with the letter today saying, oh, am I a terrible person because I just can't stand the headline and the way we're all fighting. I have my husband kind of fill me in, but I can't read the news anymore. The news doesn't go away because you're out walking in the sunshine.
Barry says, I don't know who made the comment at the show's opening, but my experience teaching at two colleges is parallel. It's you, Olivia.
Yeah.
Many of my students should be suing their high schools for graduating them. All right. And John says, go, Libby. Was going to write about my election fears, but go, Libby. While I accept ordinary language, shift the two T-O slash T-W-O slash T-O-O. And there, T-H-E-I-R, and there, T-H-E-R-E, and they are, T-H-Y, apostrophe E-Y. R-E,
right.
And similar errors create vagueness, hindering good communication. School the children, Libby.
Hopefully I won't lose my job.
And then Robert says, Panel, a lead article today's New York Times business section bemoans Hillary not allowing reporters on her plane or holding press conferences. By the way, I'm not going to read the rest of it. It's too long, but I happen to think he's got a point.
Well, that was one of our.
In other words, the point is that Hillary has not been
communicating. That's one of our topics.
Communicating with the press.
Yes. Yeah, that is one of the topics this morning, and I do want to get to it, which is that you have many have said that she has not made herself available. She has done a number of interviews, but there have been no press, general press avails. They were comparing him to some other past campaigns. And I don't know, given that this has been a quote-unquote issue for the last 2 months, I don't know what is the harm of getting her out and having her give a press conference?
I think she thinks she doesn't do them well. You know, like Barbara Streisand didn't want to perform for years because she had a little bit of stage fright. I think the same thing here. I think she just doesn't think she does them well.
And Carly Simon.
Yeah, and Carly Simon. And so she's got to get over it because she does need to do them. She's not, if she's elected, she's not going to be able to get away with not doing them. So she might as well start doing them now.
Well, I think what happens is she's afraid that she's going to get some malicious reporter is going to catch her in something, you know, using the wrong word.
But that's
like
happening
that.
Now anyway. So.
She had a press conference last year at the UN when the email scandal first came out, and she did terribly at
it.
And so there is some basis that I think she also has made a miscalculation that press conferences don't matter anymore. She's given something like 300 interviews with a variety of different people, including entertainers.
Right.
And now suddenly, why is it that I'm sorry, I'm a reporter, but really, is it that different? A press conference versus an interview.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Come
that,
on.
No, it really isn't. And if you remember, Barack Obama also got criticized for not doing enough press conferences, that he was doing interviews. He has figured out, and I think Hillary's people wrongly, I think it's become an issue, and therefore she just has to have it. But they calculate it. Why not? I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm doing interviews. Why do I have to have a press conference?
And
which
by the way, another
she hates.
And another technique that they use is when they travel, they'll give a press conference. Conference with the, you know, what I know this.
They don't know them as much. They don't know the issues as much.
Well, maybe. Should we say minor leagues or should we not? Probably not.
They don't know as much.
Well, but having her on Jimmy Kimmel trying to open a pickle jar is a far cry.
That was a good move, and it was not the only interview she gave. I know that the New York Times mentioned that. Like, this was all of her interviews, those 300, are not all Jimmy Kimmel. She's given all kinds of interviews. I'm not saying it's right. Because the whole idea of a press conference has become an issue, she has to do it.
Right.
However, I can see where she doesn't like them. She's uncomfortable in them. She's doing other stuff. And who is giving as many as they? We don't need them like we did with FDR, who was good at them, or JFK. You don't need them anymore. There are other ways to reach people.
Well, yes.
Lots of other ways.
Yeah. Look, they do what will help them, what their handlers think is good for them. Not major league, good for everybody else, but good for them and their electability. We all
Sorry,
know
Sorry, you're looking at me skeptically. I'm not a big fan of White House press conferences. I think they're all about who gets to ask the question.
Okay, but we're not talking about a White House. We're not talking about a White House.
What are we talking about? Same thing. These are people who are going to be the White House correspondents if their guy wins.
Well, yes. I think Rosemary has a point. I really do.
They have
now. In the old days, you know, when Kennedy was up there, he would purposely call on May Craig or one of these other
people. Get up and grandstand.
They'd rant, and he would handle them beautifully and with a real sense of confidence.
Sam Donaldson, Dan Rather, they all made their careers from these performances. So if Hillary Clinton does not trust reporters, she's paid a heavy price for that. She's paying it now by not having this. This is another case where we'll have an issue against
Hillary.
But
you said there are other ways. But you said there's other ways for her to get her message out.
She's
but what about us getting our message out and asking the questions that we want to know? What opportunity?
You have to be kidding me. You think we really are getting our questions asked at news conferences? Debates, I'll grant you. Stuff on Twitter and Facebook, yes. But in a news conference, that's not us at all.
You know, I love
that's all reporters.
I love the New York Times, I can tell you. But here's what I think about their worldview. They hate Trump. They dislike Hillary. So they're not giving up all their credibility because what they do is they slam Trump right and left. The headlines, the rest, the way that it's done, that's the way they are. But they don't give Hillary a free ride by any means.
Dana Milbank column in the Washington Post this week. Yes. I highly recommend it. And he says,
can I,
you know,
that? I meant to go include
that. That's just a great column, and it's just what you said, Alan. He goes, you know, I have compared Hillary Clinton to Monty Python. I have no love lost for her.
Right.
And if she were running against Kasich or Jeb Bush, I think we'd be seeing her political obituary. But this is not a case of two unattractive candidates, one unattractive candidate, and one guy who'd bring down democracy. That's a big difference. It's a really powerful column.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation after this.
Support comes from The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. Hudson Beach Glass Beacon, a contemporary glass and jewelry gallery representing 80 American artists. HudsonBeachGlass.com. Center for Natural Wellness School of Massage Therapy, offering massage therapy training in the Capital Region. Classes starting in September. Your future is in your hands. CNWSMT.com. And from Grist Mill Real Estate, Saugerties, for over 40 years, a locally owned independent realtor offering one-on-one consultations for buyers and sellers specializing in homes in Saugerties, Woodstock, Kingston, and beyond. GristMillRealEstate.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. We welcome you. I had to like take a mental note. What? Where are we again?
It's Friday already.
I know. Yeah, there you go.
It's been a long day.
Okay. So, did you have a few more letters?
Well, it was some letters. Could I just mention another story, Joe?
Absolutely.
Would I have permission to? All hell is breaking loose in the Berkshires, but it's a story that I think a lot of people can understand, and that is a Sheffield, little town, policeman picked up a Great Barrington cop, smelled liquor on his breath, apparently, according to Heather Bellow's excellent article in the Berkshire Edge, called his superiors, was told to get him a ride home. No charges were brought. When cops are allowed to do that and people know that this kind of thing is going on and that anybody else or many other people would end up in jail or with a serious problem, having the licenses taken away and everything else, this undermines policing in our area and every area. When you know that the thin blue line, we protect our own and we have a different set of laws for us. Good. I've given my editorial.
Okay.
Was off duty at the time, right?
Right.
So I think there are many of us, perhaps in this room, who remember there was an incident where Congressman John Sweeney,
I remember it very well,
was involved an accident. And the roads were shut down. He was taken away from the scene, and then nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And it was up in our neck of the woods in Washington County. So, I mean, it's kind of standard operating procedure, isn't it?
Well, it may be, but I'm going to say this: when it's a judge, well, we've seen that. When it's a judge, or when it's a
judge's kid,
or it just is as unfair to most Americans. They don't like it because they know that these people are playing by a different set of rules. Try going on the thruway sometime and watching a guy with assembly or center plates speed past you at 100 miles an hour or, you know, 90 miles an hour. It ain't right. Just ain't right.
Anybody want to weigh in on that? No? We're good?
what he said.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Rosemary. That's right.
Well,
what is interesting is how much outrage there is in the Berkshires right now. I mean, you know, the letters and the stuff is, and a quote, the town manager says, I've ordered up a report from the police chief.
How did this happen? If the whole idea was a cover-up and you have two police departments in on it, how'd it get out?
Because people listen to the radio. The cop radio.
That may be, but I also think there's some very good policemen. And I think these very good policemen know that the errant ones are undermining their efforts.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, they're talking, and they don't like it. Let me tell you, Great Barrington's cop police force, I'm very disappointed because I spoke out about the Great Barrington Police Force a long time ago, and I thought it was all over, and I thought we had finally gotten to the point where we had an honest deal. And I'm very disappointed in this. And I think that this Heather Bellow, who writes for the Berkshire Edge, did a brilliant job in her analysis. She talked to everybody, including apparently some people who really were on the inside.
I do want to get to our final topic this morning, and that is Colin Kaepernick, a quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. Preseason game Friday night, Green Bay Packers against the 49ers. Colin Kaepernick, who is the quarterback, took a stand by not standing. He said that he decided to remain seated during the national anthem during this preseason game as a statement against racial oppression. I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color, he told NFL media in an interview. Kaepernick, who is biracial and was adopted by white parents, said he had discussed his feelings with his family, and after months of witnessing recent civil unrest, he decided to be more active, according to the NFL media report. He had not informed the team of his intentions. This is not something that I'm going to run by anybody. I'm not looking for approval. I have to stand up for people that are oppressed. Meanwhile, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, all hell breaks loose. And the greatest part of this story is instead of saying we'll fine him, we'll kick him out, both the league and the team say everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
I have a student, Billy DeLapp, who's working down at the Capitol right now. He is a veteran.
Yep.
He came to school after the war. He wrote about this today, and I loved it. He goes, there's lots of reasons to hate him for what he does, the lack of respect. This is a privileged man, quarterback. He makes millions. You know, what kind of country allows a black who has biracial, but who has his background, he's poor, comes from nothing, and he's risen. He should be more respectful. And yet, he's using his position to do something he believes in and mm-hmm. stands up for. And we're seeing increasingly sports figures standing up and taking stands for things they believe in. We pay attention to sports figures. We want them to be role models. And now they're modeling. So good for him. And I hope it has some effect.
But also, as I was just trying to say, Rosemary, good for the league. Good for the team.
Yes. And also good for those parents. Yes. Those foster parents raised that boy right.
Yes.
And I don't mean boy in the sense,
correctness.
They're young men. Well, the other thing, too, is that, and I had heard there are a couple conflicting reports here. There was one that the team knew he was going to do it and gave them the blessing to do it, number one. That was one report that I heard. And the other one was that, and I haven't seen this reflected recently, but that he was it was going to be one game, it was going to be preseason, he was going to do it, and it may not reflect
now,
throughout the season.
Now, and the report I read, Joe, was that he had been doing it, but he hasn't been playing. He's been
sitting
on the bench.
He was not in uniform, and he was injured, so it didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
No one noticed that he wasn't doing that. Yeah. So that's it. I mean, he's using the power of that uniform, and good for him. It reminds me of the Ethiopian Olympian who won the marathon, came in second in the marathon, and he came in with his arms crossed symbolize, and at the risk of his life did that, by the way.
It's like the two guys when we were kids. I think it was...
When you were a kid. Not
when I was a kid. I was just reading the story. I think John Carlos was one of them, right? How it almost destroyed his life. You know, he lost his family, he got divorced, there was so much pressure, there was so much negativity, but he needed to stand up for what was right. And I, you know, flag burning, the national anthem, all of this stuff, it's like, it's up to you as to what you want to do. That's why we live in a free country. We have freedom of speech. We make the decisions on our own. When I was in sixth grade, I wouldn't say the Pledge of Allegiance. I got brought down to the assistant principal's office. He called my parents, and my parents
said, "Why wouldn't you say it?"
Because it wasn't true. It wasn't true. Not everyone was not equal. And that's what the Pledge of Allegiance says, right? It wasn't true. And my parents backed me up.
And some of us just shut up when the under God comes up.
When the what comes up?
Part of that under
God. Oh, the under God, yeah. But I, you know, I wouldn't do it. And I got in trouble, but my parents were like, no, she's got a brain, let her use it, and it's and she's right. And it, for me, back then, it was about people of color, because they weren't, I mean, I was 12, 13 years old, you know. But we have the right to do things, whether we want to do it or not. And this nationalistic jingoism of you have to stand, you have to say the pledge, you have to sing the national anthem. The kids who are like crying on the gold medal stands, they're getting slammed on social media for not knowing the words of the national anthem. Well, they're overcome with emotion because they just won.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break.
There is, by the way, no law, no league rule. There's nothing that says you have to stand. It is simply tradition.
Respect.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I hope you all know the second verse, the national anthem.
We do not. Are you going to sing it for us? That'd be a good
one. No,
way
but
to
Mrs. Anderson in the sixth grade made us memorize it. I do remember that.
All right. Well, we're out of time.
Okay.
So we'll do. Maybe you'll do it during the Berkshire Rambler show.
Oh, maybe. When is that? What is that? That's
when
this
is that
Saturday
now?
Night. I believe.
Saturday night at eight.
Yeah, you'll do
8
the
o'clock.
Second.
8 o'clock. I've already heard from George Lay at the place who said, you know, give him a hand, give him a finger, give him a hand, saying, we'll talk about what's going on there the rest of the week.
Okay. We are out of time. But thank you all. We'll be back tomorrow with another roundtable panel. The roundtable continues after this short break.